Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novik. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, one perek each day. Today we'll be learning the Rambam's Haggadah Shel Pesach, which he includes at the end of Hilchot Chametz Umatzah. Before we get to the text of the Rambam's Haggadah, though, we'll finish the last halachot of Perek Chet about the end of the Seder, beginning with Birkat HaMazon and the third of the four cups of wine. Halacha Yud. V'acharkach notel yadav umvarech birkat hamazon al kos shlishi v'shotehu. V'acharkach mozeg kos rivii v'gomer alav et ha'alel v'omer alav birkat hashir v'hi yehalucha shem elokeinu kol ma'asecha v'chulei. V'eino to'em acharkach klum kol alayla chutz min amayim. V'yesh lo limzog kos chamishi v'lomar alav halel hagadol v'hu mehodu l'ashem kitov ad al narot bavel. V'chos ze Eino chova kmo arba hakosot, v'yesh lo ligmor et ha'alel b'chol makom shiyirtze, af al pi sheino mekom se'uda. After the meal, one washes his hands, that is, mayim achronim, and says birkat hamazon over the third cup, which he then drinks. He then pours the fourth cup and completes the hallel on it, beginning with the third paragraph, as the first two were said at the end of Magid, just before the drinking of the second cup. For the Rambam, the Hallel continues and ends in the manner familiar to us from when we see Hallel in the morning, with the bracha of Yehalelucha. Afterwards, if one wishes, he may pour a fifth cup and recite on it Hallel Hagadol, another name for Mizmor Kuf Lamed Vav of Tehillim, which we say in Psukei de Zimra of Shabbat and Yom Tov, and in which each line ends with the words Ki Lolam Chasto. The Shulchan Aruch makes no mention of this fifth cup, and adds the Hallel HaGadol together with the extended bracha of Nishmat Kol Chai, familiar to us from Shabbat and Yom Tov morning, into the regular Hallel on the fourth cup, before the closing bracha of Yehalelucha. One should not eat or drink anything after the fourth cup, except water and the optional fifth cup. The Rambam ends the halacha with an interesting point. As the halal takes place after the meal, there is no need for it to be said specifically where the meal took place, and it may be said elsewhere. The Ravid responds to this with an equally interesting objection. Even if the meal is over, there is a mitzvah on the Seder night to drink four cups of wine, and only when these are drunk in one place do they qualify as a set of four cups for the purpose of this mitzvah. There seems to be a fundamental debate between the Rambam and the Ravid whether the four cups of the Seder are to be seen as separate entities, each operating according to its own rules independently of the others, or if these are just four parts of one unified whole. Halacha Yud Aleph. Makom shnagu lechol tzali b'lelei psachim, ochlim. Makom shnagu shelo lechol, gzira shema yomru, basar pesachu, einan ochlim. Uvachol makom asur lechol set salui kulo ke'echad b'lel ze, mipnei shenir'e ke'ochel kodshim bachutz. Vim haya mechutach, o shechiser menu ever, o shalak bo ever v'hu mechubar, harei ze mutar b'makom shnagu. After the Churban, the custom developed in some places not to eat any roasted meat at the Seder. This was based on a concern that roasted meat resembles the Korban Pesach, which must be eaten roasted, and so an onlooker may think that a Korban is being consumed outside of its proper place, namely Yerushalayim. Even places which continue to eat roasted meat in general at the Seder abstain from eating a fully roasted sheep, as this very much resembles the Korban Pesach, for which a sheep was typically offered. But if the sheep is cut up, or missing a limb, or even if it is whole, but some part of it was cooked in liquid rather than roasted, then in all these cases it is clear that the sheep is not a Korban Pesach and may be eaten at the Seder in places where the custom in general is to eat roasted meat. Halacha Yud Bet. Mi she'ein lo yayin b'leil ha-Pesach, mekadesh al ha-pat, kederech she'oseh b'Shabbat, ve'oseh kol ha-dvarim al ha-seder hazeh. Mi she'ein lo yarak el ha-maror bilvad, b'atchila mevarech al ha-maror shtei brachot, borei pri adama, ve'al achilat maror, ve'ochel. U'chishegomer ha-gada mevarech al ha-matzah ve'ochla, ve'chozer ve'ochel min ha-maror b'lo bracha. What if one has no wine for the Seder? Then he makes Kiddush on matzah, as we saw in Hilchot Shabbat Perek Kaf Tet, that Kiddush can be made on bread. And otherwise, he does everything at the Seder as anyone else would do, except, of course, that he cannot fulfill the mitzvah of drinking four cups. What if one has no vegetable to use as karpas, other than maror itself? Then he uses the maror for karpas, and says, along with the borei pri adama of karpas, the additional bracha of al achilat maror. When he gets later to the point in the Seder where maror is eaten after the matzah, he eats more maror without a bracha. There are two ways to understand this din, which diverge on the question of when exactly the person in this situation fulfills the mitzvah of eating maror. It may be that he fulfills the mitzvah when he makes the brachot and eats the maror for the first time, in which case he eats maror again after the matzah only because the matzah is supposed to be followed by maror, just as was done at the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Alternatively, perhaps he only makes the bracha on maror at the start of the Seder, because it would seem incongruous to eat maror and only afterwards make a bracha on it. But really, he fulfills the mitzvah later, after eating matzah. The Rambam doesn't clarify which of these is true, and the question may not have a practical ramification for him, because the eating of the karpas and the eating of the maror are very similar. Recall that the Rambam requires karpas to be dipped in charoset and to be at least a kazayit in size, just like maror on both counts. But for the Shulchan Aruch and other poskim, who distinguish between the ways in which karpas and maror are eaten, the difference between the two understandings of the Rambam has very clear nafkaminot. The Shulchan Aruch takes the view that the mitzvah of maror is only fulfilled later, while the first eating is only for karpas. Thus, even though this person makes the bracha of al achilat maror, he eats less than a kazayit, and he dips the maror in salt water or vinegar, not charoset. Only when he eats maror the second time must it be a kazayit and dipped in charoset. The Mishnah Berurah refers to several Rishonim who take the opposite approach. The mitzvah of maror is fulfilled at the start of the Seder, immediately following his two brachot, and so he should eat a kazayit dipped in charoset at that point. When he gets to maror later in the Seder and eats it without a bracha, that can be less than a kazayit and dipped in some other liquid like vinegar or salt water. Halacha Yud Gimel. Mi she'ein lo matzah mishumeret ela kazayit, kishegomer sudato mimatzah she'ina mishumeret, mevarech al achilat matzah, v'ochel oto kazayit, ve'ino to'eim acharav klum. If one has only one kazayit of matzah mishumeret, then he saves it for the end of the meal, after eating earlier in the meal other matzah which isn't mishumeret. He then recites the bracha of al achilat matzah, and eats this kazayit, and eats nothing else afterwards. Note that the term matzah mishumeret here doesn't mean what we call shmura matzah, which refers to guarding against chimutz, as we discussed in Perek Hey. Recall that the Rambam wrote back there in Perek Hey that all matzah and any other grain products eaten during Pesach must be guarded against chimutz from when the grain is harvested. Rather, the term mishumeret refers here to the requirement we saw in Perek Vav. Matzat mitzvah must be prepared with intent for normal human consumption, excluding, we learned there, isat klavim, and matzah made as part of a korban. This halacha here says that because Chazal wanted each person to end the Seder with a taste of mitzvah in his mouth, as we learned in Halacha Tet, the mitzvah of eating matzah is delayed, when necessary, to the end of the meal in order to fulfill this requirement. We see from this how important it is to end with a taste of mitzvah in the mouth, as this overrides both the general preference to perform a mitzvah at the earliest possible opportunity rather than to delay it, as well as the preference to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah together with the mitzvah of maror. The Shulchan Aruch writes explicitly that even in this scenario of one kazayit matzah mishumeret eaten at the end of the meal, the maror is eaten with a bracha at its usual place in the Seder. There is a debate among Achronim whether Korich is eaten at all in this situation. Halacha Yudalit, mi shiyashen betocha seuda vehikitz, eino chozer v'ochel. Bnei chavura shiyashnu miktzatam betocha seuda, chozrin v'ochlin. Nirdemu kulan v'nei oru, lo yochlu. Nitnamnemu kulam yochlu. If one falls asleep during the meal, while eating by himself, then when he wakes up, he may not eat any more. If a group is eating together, and some fall asleep, but not all, then those who sleep may continue eating when they wake up. If everyone in the group falls asleep, then they may not continue eating afterwards. But if they merely nod off, mitnamnem, without falling asleep, then they may continue eating. Most Rishonim, including the Ravid here, understand this entire halacha, whose origin is a Mishnah at the end of Masechet Pesachim, to refer only to the eating of the Korban Pesach. The problem with eating from the Korban Pesach after sleeping is either, as the Ravid says, that a Korban is disqualified when someone is distracted from it, hesechadat, or Rashi suggests that this is similar to eating the Korban in two different places, which may not be done in the case of the Korban Pesach. If there is no korban, the Ravid continues, then even if everyone present falls asleep, this is a hesech hadat for brachot purposes, and so everyone would need to wash and make hamotzi again, but they may do so and continue eating. The Rambam, though, does not seem to limit this din that they cannot continue eating at all only to the Korban Pesach, and seems to be speaking of the Seder meal even nowadays without the Korban Pesach. If they fall asleep, they cannot continue eating, even if they wash and make hamotzi again. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam verbatim, also seemingly applying this halacha even to a modern-day Seder. But the Ramah quotes from the Tur and other Rishonim that this din refers nowadays only to the end of the meal, after everyone has begun to partake of the afikomen, because the afikomen is eaten zecher l'korban Pesach. This is consistent with other ways in which the Ramah applies to the afikomen laws of the korban Pesach, as we saw when we discussed halacha tet in the last year, including the din that it must be eaten in one location, which for Rashi is the entire reason for this halacha about falling asleep. This concludes Perek Chet. The Rambam ends Hilchot Chametz Umatzah with what he calls Nusach HaHagadah. We've already seen the Rambam supplement Halachot with liturgy at the end of Sefer Ahava, where he included his Seder HaTfilot. Just as that collection of texts included more than the several parts of Tfilah that were discussed in Hilchot Tfilah, so too the Rambam's Haggadah, by which he means, recall from Perek Zayin, only the Magid section of the Seder, includes more than the essential ingredients of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim that we learned about in the last two prakim. The earliest versions of the Haggadah, which resemble the text we use today, date from the period of the Gaonim, and the Rambam follows this familiar text, with some differences which we'll point out. As we go through his Haggadah, our focus will be on the additional parts which go beyond the basic components of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, and we'll aim to understand the role of each of these parts. The Haggadah begins with the familiar paragraph of Halach Ma'anya before Manishtana, with three extra words added at the beginning. Bivhilu Yatzanu Mimitzrayim. We left Mitzrayim in a hurry. Bivhilu is the Aramaic translation of the Hebrew Bechipazon, in a rush. This paragraph is in Aramaic, unlike the rest of the Haggadah, which is in Hebrew, and really consists of three unconnected sentences. A statement about the nature of matzah as Lach Ma'anya, Lechem Oni, or bread of the poor, an invitation to the needy to join our meal, and finally, an expression of hope that while this year we are slaves in exile, next year we will celebrate the Seder as free people in Eretz Yisrael. The language of Aramaic, as well as the self-reference as slaves in exile, seem to indicate that these lines were added to the Haggadah well after the Churban, most likely during the time of the Gemara, when the vernacular was Aramaic. The last two sentences are understandable lines of introduction to the Seder. But the first sentence is something of a mystery. Why do we begin Magid with a line about the matzah? This may relate to the previous stage of the Seder, yachatz, or splitting the matzah into two pieces. We mentioned that there is no source in the Gemara, hence not in the Rambam either, in the last two prakim, for breaking the matzah before Magid. So why did the practice develop to add the stage of yachatz, breaking the matzah, between Karpas and Magid? The answer may lie in two drashot the Gemara makes on the phrase lechem oni used by the Torah to refer to matzah, both of which we've referenced already in earlier prakim. One is that the matzah must be a prusa, a broken piece, and not a full loaf. The other is that matzah is lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbei, that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim should be done in the presence of the matzah. The practice to break the matzah before Magid comes from combining these two drashot. The Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim should be done in front of the matzah, and the matzah should be a broken piece rather than a full loaf. Hence, a matzah must be broken in two before the start of Magid. And once we do that, we take the opportunity to explain the reason for matzah in Aramaic, the vernacular, so that even the women and children who don't speak Hebrew will understand. Rav Salvechik explains that the three additional words of Bihilu Yatsanu Mitzrayim, which appear in the Rambam's text, are part of this explanation, as the matzah has a dual symbolism. On the one hand, it is the bread of the poor, symbolizing our servitude in similar fashion to the maror. And on the other hand, it symbolizes our redemption from that servitude, when we left Mitzrayim in such haste that the dough had no time to rise. Hence we refer to matzah both as lach ma'anya, the bread of affliction, and also we say, bivhilu yatzanu mimitzrayim, this was part of our redemption which was done in a hurry. After the paragraph of Halach Ma'anya comes the Manishtana, which we've discussed, followed by the first answer of Avadim Hayinu, representing one understanding of Matchil Bignut Umesayim B'Shavach. This is followed by two paragraphs which we haven't yet seen. The first is a story of five Tanaim, among them Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who had the Seder together in Bnei Brak and stayed up all night talking about Yitziat Mitzrayim. The second is a Mishnah from the first Perek of Masechet Brachot about the requirement of Zichirat Yitziat Mitzrayim in Kriyat Shema, in which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah learns from Ben Zoma that this requirement applies even in Kriyat Shema of the night and not only in Kriyat Shema of the day. The purpose of the first paragraph, the story, is likely to illustrate by way of example the previous line in the Haggadah. Even wise sages who have mastered Torah are obligated in the mitzvah of Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim. And even in their case, we say Kol HaMarbeh HaRezeh Mishubach. The second paragraph, the Mishnah from Brachot, seems less relevant, as it discusses Zichirat Yitziat Mitzrayim rather than Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim, and we explain several differences between these two mitzvot. Rav Soloveitchik points out a fascinating difference of one word between the text in the Rambam's Haggadah and the text we have. The Rambam adds the word Amar Lahem, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, at the beginning of the Mishnah. And with this one word, he connects the two paragraphs into one story. At this long Seder in Bnei Brak, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah told the other Tanaim what he learned from Ben Zoma as part of their extended discussion of Yitziat Mitzrayim. How is this halacha about Zichirat Yitziat Mitzrayim a fulfillment of Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim? Rav Soloveitchik proves from here that Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim isn't restricted to recounting the details of the story of the Jews leaving Egypt. Any halachic discussion in which Yitziat Mitzrayim plays a central role is also relevant, and so the five Tanaim spoke about the mitzvah of Zichirat Yitziat Mitzrayim as part of their all-night Seder. The reason the second paragraph about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is included in the Haggadah at all may be to teach us exactly this point about how the mitzvah of Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim may be fulfilled. The Rambam's Haggadah continues with the Midrash about the four sons, the Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, and the She'enu Yodea Lish'ol. This Midrash identifies the four places in which the Torah describes speaking to one's child about Yitziat Mitzrayim, three of them in response to a question the child asks, and one initiated by the parent, Vihigadeta Levincha, as referring to four types of children who must be taught in different ways. The reason this Midrash appears in the Haggadah seems clearly to elaborate on a line in the Mishnah in Pesachim, Lefi dato shel ben aviv milamdo. The father must teach his child in accordance with a child's knowledge and temperament. The Midrash is therefore a lesson in pedagogy, instructing the parent how best to teach Yitziat Mitzrayim to each type of child. As this Midrash is so well known, precisely because of its insertion into the text of the Haggadah, it is sometimes misunderstood as a literal pshat reading of the psukim which quote the three questions. It should be emphasized that this isn't the case, as, for instance, the question Ma Havodah Zot Lachem, in context in Sefer Shmot Perek Yud Bet, is not the question of a wicked son at all. And the answer given in the very next pasuk is a detailed explanation of the essence of the Korban Pesach, which itself appears later in the Haggadah. After this discussion of the four sons, we are ready for the central part of Magid, namely the Midrash on the Psukim of Arami Oved Avi. As an introduction to this Midrash, the Haggadah brings first the second version of Matchil Bignut Umesayim B'Shevach, which includes a larger historical context, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zerah Hayu Avotenu, V'Achshav Kervanu HaMakom LaAvodato, supported by three Psukim from Sefer Yehoshua. In a rare deviation from the focus on Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Haggadah points out that just as Hashem promised Avram to redeem his descendants from slavery in Egypt and fulfilled this promise, so too, Vihi Shamda Lavotenu Volanu. That promise continues to serve as a guarantee in every generation that Hashem will save us, whenever necessary, from those who threaten the Jewish people. The Midrash of the Psukim of Arami Oved Avi continues until the listing of the Ten Makot and the acronym of Ditzach Adash Be'achav, provided by Rabbi Yehuda. At this point, there are parts of our Haggadah which do not appear in the Rambam's text, even though they too date back to the Haggadot from the period of the Gaonim. First, we have a midrash which quotes the different opinions of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Akiva about how many makot the Egyptians suffered at the Yam Suf, 50, 200, or 250, each number arrived at through a calculation based on psukim. This is followed by the poem of Dayenu, listing 15 different ways in which Hashem bestowed kindness upon us from Yitziat Mitzrayim until arriving in Eretz Yisrael and building the Beit HaMikdash. There is a historical record, attested to by Rabbi Avram ben Arambam, that his father, the Rambam, in fact knew of and recited these parts of the Haggadah. Why then did he not include them here? The answer may be similar to how we explained why the Rambam didn't include Korbanot in his Seder HaTfilot, despite the fact that he most likely said them. Even though these parts are customarily said, the halachic basis for doing so is very weak. The focus at the Seder is supposed to be Yitziat Mitzrayim, possibly with additional historical background from earlier periods, but certainly not later events like Kriyat Yam Suf, which is commemorated on the last day of Pesach, and subsequent stages on the road to entering Eretz Yisrael. The remainder of the Rambam's Haggadah follows the procedure he laid out in Perek Chet, Halachot Dalet and Hey, explanations of the three central objects of the Seder, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, followed by the logical conclusion of the miracles of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Lefichach, therefore, we have the obligation to praise Hashem by reciting the Hallel. The first two paragraphs of Hallel are recited, followed by the Bracha of Asher Ga'alanu, which ends the section of Magid, that is, Haggadah in the Rambam's terminology. In a few lines following this text, the Rambam points out that in Chutz La'aretz, the Seder on the second night is identical to that of the first night, including four cups of wine and all other details. Thank you for joining me in learning today's parak of the Mishneh Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next parak.